Welcome to the College Try Podcast, or should I say welcome back? This is episode 4. Can you believe it? We've already made so much progress. Yes. All right. You're listening to the College Try Podcast here. This is a podcast brought to you by ESPN Pensacola, 1330 AM, 99.1 FM. I am your host, Austin Price, as always. And we're just going to dive right in because this could very well be the longest episode of the College Try Podcast so far. That's not saying much. I typically ramble a lot anyway, but there's just so much to unpack. So we're going to get started right away here with the first update to the AP Top 25. Don't worry. I'm not going to do a rundown of the whole Top 25. Most people don't care about that anyway. We're just going to get started with our Top 10 here because that's really all that matters. And that's what's really going to segue into some of the stuff that we're talking about here. All right. So you're looking at the Top 10. Not much has really changed. Georgia and Ohio State are still your 1 and 2. Texas, Alabama, Notre Dame, they all moved up, you know, 1 or 2 spots. Missouri's now in the top 10. They were 11, now they're 9, so good for them. Michigan dropped a spot because they struggled with Fresno State, just like I knew they would. The biggest drop was, well, let me rephrase. The second biggest drop was Oregon, despite having a double-digit win to start their season. We'll touch on that in a little bit. But the biggest drop, undoubtedly, was the Florida State Seminoles. Florida State was number 10, but after losing to Georgia Tech and losing last night to Boston College by double digits at home, they are not only out of the top 10, they are not only out of the top 25. The Florida State Seminoles do not have a single AP vote. They don't have a single vote. Teams that have more votes than Florida State today are Colorado. Colorado went 4-8 last year. They struggled with an FCS team, North Dakota State. They won that game by 5. That game was a Hail Mary away, and it was a successful Hail Mary. So it was 5, but it was just 5 yards short. So 5 yards away from losing to an FCS team, that team has an AP vote. Florida State does not. West Virginia, they lost badly to Penn State to open their season. Very disappointing performance by the Mountaineers at home to start their year. They're 0-1, pathetically so. We'll get more on that later. But they have 2 AP votes. And then UTSA, a Group of 5 team that's been good recently, but they opened their year struggling to pull away for a while there from Kennesaw State, who is playing their first game ever officially as an FBS power. That team has 3 AP votes. Now, I'm not saying Florida State deserves more votes than these people. You started out 0-2. But it just goes to put into perspective just how far Florida State has fallen. I don't know if between just 2 different AP polls, I don't know if we have seen a collapse like that ever. Going from top 10 and then the very next poll, you don't have a single vote. There's no, I can't imagine that's ever happened before. That's unbelievable. And it just goes to show how disappointing Florida State has been. And you know what the worst part is about FSU's disappointing streak? Is that nobody's actually talking about it. You ever notice that? Nobody's talking about, hey, listen, these are the problems Florida State's having and they need to fix them. The court of public opinion is made up of 2 people, 2 types of people surrounding Florida State right now. You've got the people that are making fun of them for things that aren't even relevant anymore, making fun of them about last year's playoff stuff. They always make fun of Florida State fans for dragging that, allegedly, but they themselves are dragging it by bringing it up when talking about this Boston College loss. And then there's people, I kid you not, if you go to Florida State social media accounts, there are people that are Tennessee fans, and not just 1 or 2. I've seen countless Tennessee fans who are making fun of Florida State. And do you know why? Because Florida State and Tennessee had a bit of a controversy in last year's baseball season. Last baseball season, in the postseason, there was a whole controversial thing about a Tennessee batter. He swung too far, but it wasn't ruled a strike. It was a whole thing. And Florida State was upset about it then, but I haven't heard anything from Florida State about it since then. But Tennessee fans are making fun of Florida State football fans now about that baseball controversy a while back. So the people that are criticizing Florida State aren't even doing so with any merit. They're making fun of stuff that's old news and is not even remotely related. Then you've got the Florida State fans who they just want to blow everything up. They're calling for DJ's head, and they want Norvell's next to it, and then they want to go hide in a cave forever. They don't want to talk about the season. They want to blow up and start anew. And then that's on social media, in official sports media. Paul Feinbaum, he was talking about Florida State, and he's still hung up on the suing stuff. He was talking about it on ESPN this morning, talking about, I'm sure someone's down there trying to look for someone to sue, yada, 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 you know. Norvell must have listened to too much of that belly aching going on in Tallahassee. I mean, no one's actually talking about, hey, listen, this is why Florida State is struggling. This is why they're 0-2. What do they need to do to fix this? No one's talking about it. So we're just sitting here in the dark while Florida State continues to flounder from head to toe. And that brings me to something else I want to mention. This is not a DJ Uiagalelei thing. This is not a Mike Norvell thing. DJ is one of the more experienced quarterbacks in the nation. He's played for great coaches. Jonathan Smith, I believe his name was, at Oregon State, great coach. He made them a winner in his short time there. Dabo Swinney, he's one of the most decorated coaches in America of his era. Of course, playing for Dabo is a big deal. And now he's playing for Mike Norvell. Norvell's a proven coach. But people want to call for their heads and no one else's, as if Florida State's O-line and D-line haven't both been bullied. And that teams like Georgia Tech and Boston College, how pathetic it is for them to even have this ability to control the flow of the game from start to finish. They don't even want to talk about how it's a full-on team effort in these losses. They just want to look at quarterback, head coach, the guys that always get the most blame, and they just, you know, they're calling to crucify them in the street and then just leave it at that. It's ridiculous. We'll never get forward with conversation on these issues, and we really need to, because I think everyone's looking around, and if you actually grill them on what is Florida State's issue, why are they performing this way, no one really has an answer for you. Lord knows I don't. But I'm sitting here looking at the Seminoles, and I'm saying, you've been the most disappointing team in college football so far this season. And it's a shame that I'm saying that, because they, on paper, have no business being in that position. But nonetheless, it's true, and it leads me into another segment that I want to do. Haven't done this yet. Looking at week one's biggest winners and biggest losers, I want to touch on this because there was a lot of teams that like really either balled out or they really struggled, like inexcusably so. Like, for example, I'll give an example. This isn't one of the biggest winners or losers, but it's just one that I think needs to be talked about. Texas Tech, they struggled with Abilene Christian, 52-51 in overtime. You're a Big 12 school. You are a Power 4 school. You now share a conference with Utah, a ranked team. You just recently shared a conference with Oklahoma and Texas. Teams like Kansas and Kansas State that are darn good programs right now. Oklahoma State just won 10 games. You're sharing a conference with them, and you're going to OT in a shootout with Abilene Christian? Pathetic. But they're not even one of the biggest losers, in my opinion. And that's what makes this segment so intriguing. With that said, we'll get started here with winner number one, the Vanderbilt Commodores. Hey, if you know what Vanderbilt did this weekend, you have got to give them love for obvious reasons. There's little explanation needed here. There's no beating around the bush. Vanderbilt is terrible. They are. They're a terrible program. To the point where I've thought, should their football team leave the SEC? That would never happen. They love the money too much. But it's like, man, should they do that? The money, the clout, it's going to speak volumes here. And you know, the SEC wants to be able to say, you know, hey, they're a full member, yada, 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 all about tradition, ironclad history, whatever. Either way, it's not going to happen, but they're so bad that you question, should it? I mean, that's just how terrible Vanderbilt is. They beat Virginia Tech to start their 2024 campaign. Virginia Tech isn't just some decent team that's historically better than Vanderbilt. They were supposed to be a dark horse in the ACC. And when you actually check the basic boxes surrounding the Hokies, it actually makes sense. When you look at the ACC, it's manageable. When you look at how Vatek did last year, they were a bowl team. I believe they finished with a positive record. Brent Pry, head coach, he's got all the more experience under his belt building this team. It's one of the toughest places to play in college football, especially in the ACC. Their quarterback was good, or so we thought. And Virginia Tech spots Vandy 17 points. They have to make some cinematic comeback, all just to lay an egg in overtime and give Vandy one of the biggest wins they've had in years. We can talk about how that's pathetic for Vatek, and we'll get more on that later because that's part of a bigger picture thing that I want to tackle. But for now, tip of the cap to Vandy. Great win. That's a good win. To beat Vatek is a good win to start any season. But especially if you're Vanderbilt, that's great. So congratulations to the Commodores. But before we move on, I do want to say this, and I knew this was going to happen. there's a narrative that a couple of people just here and there were starting to try to spin on social media regarding the Commodores, and I just want to take this moment to use my platform to the best of my abilities to nip it in the bud. I saw some schmuck online say that something to the effect of, oh, well, what a lot of people fail to understand is that Vanderbilt is playing the best of the best every week by playing in the SEC. When they play a mid-ACC team, of course they can win. I'm going to stop you right there, and I'm going to tell you to shut your mouth if you believe that for a moment. Vanderbilt is not some terrific team the minute they get out of SEC play. Stop trying to spin that narrative. And I knew people were going to do this, and it sickens me to my core because everybody neglects Vandy, acts like they're not an SEC team, until they do something that's worth a hoot. Now you've got people trying to pretend that, no, Vandy's really good. It's just the SEC is so tough for them. No. Last year, Vandy, of their four out-of-conference opponents, are you ready for this? They went, 2-2 in out-of-conference play last year. They barely beat Hawaii, and I believe that game was in Nashville. Hawaii has sucked at the Mountain West level for years now. They crushed Alabama A&M. That's an FCS team. Nobody cares. They played Wake Forest, my Demon Deacons. Wake went 4-8 last year in the ACC. So Wake, by these people's criteria, Wake should be an easy win for Vandy. Wake had one of their best games, especially on offense, against the Commodores. And speaking of good offense, you know who dropped 40 on the Commodores? The UNLV Rebels, a Mountain West team. Another Mountain West team. They're good, but they're not great. And they dropped 40 on an SEC team and won. That's all from last season. Don't even get me started on just a few years back when Vandy lost 23-3 in Nashville to East Tennessee State. Notice how nobody talks about that? East Tennessee State, an FCS school, went into Nashville, faced an SEC team, SEC country, and embarrassed the Commodores, and nobody talks about it. We don't talk about it because that's how bad Vanderbilt typically is. So if you are someone who's trying to even spin the yarn, trying to even begin to spin it, saying that, oh, Vandy's just really good outside of the SEC, shut up. I knew that SEC supremacists were going to creep out from behind the walls and they were going to start spinning this narrative about Vandy the minute they got a quality win. Shut it. That's a lie. But this week, good win, Vandy. Loser number one, we've got Oregon. My goodness. Okay, so I hinted at this earlier. Oregon was number 3 in the country in the AP poll. They are now number 7. And they won by double digits at home. You're probably thinking, how does that happen? How does a team win by double digits and drop 4 spots? Well, it's because over halfway through the fourth quarter, Oregon, in their season opener, only had a 17-14 lead over Idaho, a team that just got good at the FCS level. Oregon had to get a touchdown to go up by 10 over halfway through the fourth quarter to beat Idaho. And mind you, Oregon has one of the toughest places to play in America, is a national title favorite, rightfully so, won like 12 games last year, has one of the better head coaches, Dan Lanning, has one of the better QBs, Dylan Gabriel. And you're in a dog match with the Vandals? Give me a break. I don't care how rusty you are. I don't care what first game jitters you have. I do not care. You are held to a higher standard than that, and you horrendously missed it. Loser number two, winner number two, Penn State. I mentioned this earlier as well. Penn State went into West Virginia, and they were expected to have a dog match on their hands. West Virginia, it's a rival. They've got history. The Mountaineers won 9 games last year. It's a tough place to play, typically. And Penn State is seen as a good team, but a limited one. Them going into West Virginia, people wouldn't have been surprised to see Penn State lose this game. But if they won it by a touchdown, people would have been like, hey, great win, Nittany Lions. No, Penn State is not getting nearly enough credit as it deserves for crushing West Virginia like it did. Penn State won 34-12. West Virginia was never really in the game. I think a lot of people forgot about the game because it kicked off at the same time as Georgia-Clemson. And it had a huge weather delay. So by the time it came back, a lot of people had already moved on. They were thinking about other games and all that. But Penn State, before the delay, after the delay, really controlled it from start to finish. I mean, West Virginia was lucky to keep it close at times. 34-12 ended up being the final. Penn State was just that far ahead of the Mountaineers. Great, great win to start the season. And we already knew that Penn State was good, but this reminds us that, hey, they're coming into this season swinging. They know this is their opportunity. They're not going to blow it. This team is it's digging for gold, man, and it's close. That's what Penn State told us during week one, so congrats to them. Loser number two, Florida. This, once again, another one that needs so little justification. Florida entered their game against Miami as a narrow home underdog. I think that was fair. This was another game where I don't think the result would have really shocked anyone either way. If Miami won close, if Florida stunned them, I don't think anyone would have been like, whoa, are you kidding me? I mean, this looked like a good game. And I understand that Miami has the better quarterback, has the better head coach, has the better built team coming off the better season. I get it. But 41-17, that's a historic caliber loss for the Gators here in their opener. And at home, that is pathetic. That is so pathetic. And the thing is, here's something else that really bugs me. Billy Napier, their head coach, who, by the way, his buttocks is red. I mean, this guy is in the hottest seat. You can't imagine it. And he was before the game, after, oh my gosh. And then this fool goes to the podium. ESPN's Mike Greenberg was talking about it, Greeny, as he's known as. He was talking about what Coach Napier said. Napier at the podium, talking about the state of the Gators, because he had a lot to answer for, made a remark about Florida's haters, talking about them being in their basement or, you know, typing on social media, just saying all this nonsense. He took a jab. Greeny lost his mind. And Greeny, I think, put it best. He said, you committed a cardinal sin in coaching. You tell these players not to listen to the haters, and then you take a jab at them. And by the way, the haters in this case are your fans. They're the only reason you've made it this far, because they have such a high standard, and Florida wants to give you a chance to succeed because they're that desperate to. And you made the conscious decision at your podium to take that jab. A lot of people would probably be like, hey, Austin, chill out, all right? It was just a quick jab. Coaches do it all the time. Kelly's mean. Saban was mean. Why can't Napier take a jab? It's because he made the conscious decision to do so when his back is up against the wall. He would rather make a point of thinking, I'm going to tell them what's what, instead of thinking, I got to get this team on the right track. He's an idiot. Billy Napier just might be in the hottest seat in America. As I said, he was in that running coming into this year. But after the showing against Miami, and after him showing himself, showing his behind at that podium, he is done. Greeny said that it's probably just a matter of time until it's official that he's canned. I've said it before, I'll say it again. I think sooner rather than later, if we don't hear the news of Napier's firing, we're going to hear that we're getting reports from Gainesville that the University of Florida is going to move on from Billy Napier after this season, right? The foreshadowing of the firing. He is so cooked. He's done for. His goose is cooked. His bags are packed. All right. Winner number three. Good segue there. Miami. Miami. It's essentially everything I said about the Florida game, but reversed. We thought that Miami was going to struggle here. We thought, hey, you know, they could win this, but they could also lose it. Gainesville's kind of tough. It's a rivalry game, season opener, yada, yada, yada. Miami goes in there and just plays phenomenal. Cam Ward was phenomenal. Oh, my goodness. The Gators just were bullied by this kid. I mean, this bought Cristobal some serious time. I honestly think it did. If he just continues at his current pace, this is going to be a good year for for the Hurricanes. And I don't know. I think that while Florida's while they're in store for a season that's even worse than what we had anticipated, I think Miami's the exact opposite. I think this confirms that Miami is going to have a good year, and they were right to be ranked in the top 20. We already felt that way because of their schedule, but to come out swinging like that, I really hope it means that Miami's finally gaining some traction again. And right now, they look like the best team in the ACC. And that's what brings us to loser number three. Now, you may be thinking, your mind is scrambling. Oh, my gosh. Is loser number three Florida State? No. Is loser number three Virginia Tech? No. Is loser number three Clemson? No. Loser number three is everyone in the Atlantic Coast Conference not named Miami. The narrative has really become, over the course of this past year, that the ACC is just terrible, and they're lucky to be considered a power conference in football. That's been the narrative. And it really picked up when Florida State had their playoff snub and all that. The ACC, I can't lie to you, looks unwatchable. This is the worst time for the ACC to collapse because the narrative against it is so large, so loud. And this is a nightmare. I mean, Clemson, a few years ago, they could compete with a national title caliber Georgia. Now they can't. 34-3? I mean, I felt like I was watching any other team play Georgia. It's like, ooh, we were lucky we gave them a fight for as long as we did before they pulled away. That's how the Clemson-Georgia game felt. So Clemson is just that far from being a national contender, anything relevant. And then we've got the whole Vatek-Vandy stuff. We got the Florida State 0-2 start. They were supposed to be the favorite in the ACC, I'd say. Being ranked in the top 10, I would assume a lot of people would agree with that or at least humor it. And then we've got teams like North Carolina. They've already lost their quarterback, Max Johnson, for the season. Hope he has a speedy recovery with his leg. But they went to Minnesota, a team that finished with a losing record last year, and they were lucky to win. And then you've got NC State, ranked ACC team. They started the fourth quarter losing to Western Carolina. Wake Forest, my Deeks, they had a slow start against North Carolina A&T, if memory serves me. That was 17-10 Wake Forest at half. Duke, I believe, was only up on Elon 10-0 at half. Syracuse beat Ohio by 2 scores, a middle-of-the-road ACC team that makes bowls, beat a decent MAC team by two touchdowns. That's where the conference stands. Pitt had a slow start against Kent State, gave up a lot of points in that game. Kent State was the worst team in the FBS last year. The conference is just dreadful. The second best-looking team in the ACC, second to Miami, is Louisville. And the only reason Louisville isn't lower is because they played Austin Peay as dominantly as they should have. If they underperformed, they wouldn't even be second place. The only reason they're second place is because they played an FCS team, quote-unquote, the right way. No one else, I mean that, no one else in the ACC has looked that convincing. Maybe Georgia Tech and Boston College, but Georgia Tech didn't look that impressive against Georgia State this last weekend. And we now have full-on confirmation that beating Florida State means next to nothing, so I don't know what to make of BC yet. They got to play another game. They got to get another one under their belt. So right now, the ACC is looking like Miami's to lose. Those are your winners and losers. Now, I want to focus on this. We have a new guest, so to speak, that's going to be joining us for the rest of this college football season. And it's because their season opener gets underway Thursday. UWF, the West Florida Argonauts. They start their season against McKendree at home. I believe it's a whiteout game. They play on Thursday night. You can catch that at 6 o'clock. The game starts at 6. I think we've got about 15 minutes of pregame coverage on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620. That's going to be on Thursday evening. We've got UWF. They, as I said, host McKendree. McKendree hasn't had a winning season in several years. I think the last time they had one was in 2018, and it was like they were 6-5. Very mediocre. UWF last regular season went 8-3, and they had a couple of quality losses. Florida A&M, that's a D1 level HBCU that has been good at the D1 level. There's no shame in losing to them as a D2 school. And then they lost close to Valdosta State. Valdosta State is one of the biggest powers in the Gulf South Conference. So there's no shame in losing to them close either. So convincing loss, yes, but to a D1 school, FAMU, and then a close loss to a Gulf South power that's been very respectable, Valdosta State. Not only that, I think the smoking gun here, if anything is that UWF went to McKendree last year and won 35-3. So don't worry, Argo fans. I'm not gonna really keep you in suspense for too long. UWF clearly has this one, or at least they should. And that is much needed news for if you are a Floridian football fan, because there ain't much that Florida and Florida State are doing for you. All right. Did this last week. Going to do it now. We got week 2's biggest games here, starting with Texas at Michigan. That's number 3 going to number 10. The Big House. That's a huge one. Michigan, as I said before, I was right that they were going to struggle against Fresno State. I think Texas is a great team. I think Michigan's a good one. I'm going to take the Longhorns here to win this game. I'll say 26-17. I'll say that. Two-possession win, competitive. You know, Michigan's going to give them a scare. It's going to be a jarring environment for the Longhorns. It's going to be a huge jump in competition, too, with Texas just now playing Colorado State. But nonetheless, That will be a quality win for Texas there. So give me the Longhorns by 9, 26-17. Then I got Iowa State. They go to number 21, Iowa. This is an interesting game because not only is it an annual rivalry, but Iowa, their offense has looked better. Iowa State has been a competent team at times under Matt Campbell. Man, this is a tough one. I think it's going to be competitive. Iowa has a pretty heavy lead in this rivalry historically. I'll give it to the Hawkeyes, but I think it's going to be a struggle. I'll say 27-21. I think that's a good game. I think Iowa puts on some points, at least by their standard, but I think Iowa State keeps up. And Iowa's just a better team. And I think Iowa has a better coach. So when you combine those two things with an improving offense and with it being at Kinnick Stadium, you got to give it to the Hawkeyes there. But it'll be a good one. Be sure to tune into that one this weekend. Then it's going to be number 19, Kansas. They go to Illinois. Kansas beat Illinois, 34-23 last year. Illinois is just a struggling team right now, but now they have home field advantage. I'll say Kansas. I'll say they win this game. It's going to be by a slightly closer margin. No, I've got to be in by a more convincing margin. Excuse me. Because Illinois and Kansas both looked kind of average against their FCS opponents. It's like they beat the snot out of them, but that's what you would expect. Kansas coming off that 9-win season and having a better quarterback and head coaching situation. I think Lance Leopold is one of the best head coaches and one of the most disrespected, one of the most underappreciated in the country. So I'll take Kansas to win that game convincingly, 31-17. It's not a game that people are going to ooh and ah over, but it's nonetheless a great win for the Jayhawks when they're going on the road to a Big Ten team early in the season and winning by double digits. Then we've got Tennessee. They're number 14. They go to number 24, NC State. Now, a lot of people would probably expect me to take Tennessee huge here after what I said about NC State. Their slow start, horrendously slow start against Western Carolina. However, I'm not going to do that. Raleigh is a brutal place to play. And NC State has a nasty habit of playing down to their competition. If you actually look at how they've played Group of Five competition in the past, you'll see what I'm talking about. I just didn't think that these struggles would move down to the FCS level. But nonetheless, in spite of struggling with little guys consistently, NC State has been a rather formidable program these past few years under Dave Doran. They're at home. Man, Tennessee crushed Chattanooga, but that doesn't mean anything. So it's going to be a huge jump in the gun to be on the road against a ranked ACC team. But I still got Tennessee. I think NC State is limited more so than the Volunteers. I'll take Tennessee 38-24. But don't be surprised if NC State keeps it within that point spread there. But I got Tennessee by 2 touchdowns, 38-24 Vols there. Had an upset alert last week. It was Michigan-Fresno State. And when I say upset alert, I don't mean book it, it's going to happen. I mean it could happen. There's a very real chance it could happen, or at least a team could scare the bigger fish. Right. And that is what we saw against Fresno State, Michigan. If you don't remember how that game went or if you didn't watch it, it was 23-10 Wolverines late in the game. Fresno State was knocking on the door of a touchdown. It was about to be a one score game. And it was like a screen by Fresno State, read beautifully by the Michigan defense, picked off, taken all the way home. And that ended up being the final score, 30-10. So it looks like Michigan took care of business, but it was a struggle win for sure up until the very end there. So I was right about that being an upset alert, not an upset declaration, upset alert. But we've got two upset alerts here. I think I mentioned this one when we were talking about some preseason topics. App State, they go to number 25, Clemson. App State, you want to talk about a team that's known for being a giant killer? They always scare, if not beat, Power 5 opposition. Clemson, man, they're just not a competitor anymore. And I don't know where the floor is for that team. So I've got to take App State to at least maybe early on give them a bit of a scare. Clemson may wake up late. Clemson may come out with something to prove and just completely marauder the Mountaineers. I don't know. But I've got to think that App State can maybe catch Clemson off guard. You can't count that team out. I think they won like 9 games last year. They're consistently good. So don't sleep on the Mountaineers. I hope Clemson doesn't, because that is a game that they can certainly lose. I do think they can lose that. Then we've got Boise State at Oregon. Oregon's number 7 in the country. As I said, Autzen Stadium's a brutal place to play, but you want to talk about giant killers? You want to talk about a big dog? A wolf in sheep's clothing? Boise State. They're consistently good. They've got the culture, the giant slayer ego and image. They play tough. And Oregon almost lost to Idaho. The only team better than the Vandals in Idaho is Boise State. So for them to be going into Oregon, I don't know. I think once again, this could be a game where maybe Boise State just kind of scares them just a teeny tiny bit. And Oregon, you know, will eventually pull away, but Boise State is not a pushover. We got to consider that. I don't know. But those are my two almost upsets. App State, Clemson, Boise State, Oregon. Both of those teams are favored, Clemson and Oregon, by three possessions, I think. That could be, give or take, the margin there. Maybe they win by three possessions, but it won't be without a fight, I'm sure. That's episode 4 of the College Try Podcast. Oh my goodness, we're almost 5 episodes in. I'm Austin Price. Thank you so much for joining. This has been a fantastic Tuesday night, and we will be right back next Tuesday to give you another rundown of everything happening in college football. Good night, everybody. See you next week.